You are listening to The Phoenix, where science is stranger than fiction. We will discover both the enigmatic and absurd side of science, including biology, the animal kingdom, and even the paranormal.
What's up, everyone? This is The Phoenix, your host for The Phoenix Podcast. And as I do with every show, I am so glad you're here. I am so happy you decided to download this episode. And as always, I want to thank everybody for listening. You can go to my website at blazingtalons.com and email me at phoenix@blazingtalons.com as well with any ideas or comments. And you can always leave me a voicemail at 206-339-7125. And you can tell me all about maybe a UFO that you saw. Maybe you just have this amazing story idea that I should either write about or podcast about. But either way, I would appreciate any feedback that you can give me. And I did want to ask everyone to do me a favor, if you can, if you have the time, and you remember to do this, to go to my website. Look on the far right, the sidebar there, and you'll see a graphic that says Podcast Alley. And if you click that, you'll go to the website, and please vote for me. The more votes I get, the higher my rankings go, and that means just more exposure and more people will be listening. Right now, under the category of science and medicine, I am number 3, which is pretty good, although I'm below another podcast called Naked Scientists. So I don't know how to compete with that. I did get such a wonderful, great response from episode 7, even though I took out the more personal stuff that was revealed during my session. It's still pretty personal. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there that don't believe in reincarnation. And there's a lot of people that think it's all a bunch of BS. But me personally, you know, you have to experience it for yourself. And after having experienced it, I have to say that I am a believer. And we'll go into that in more detail in this episode. But Toginet.com premiered 2 weeks ago, and they're still looking for more indie music. So if you, or maybe you know someone that's a musician, they've got some great music and they just don't have a place for it, you know, hey, give it to me, bring it to me, call me, email me, whatever, and we'll try to get you in touch with the right people, and maybe they can be playing, and maybe their music can find a home at Toginet.com. Again, it's Toginet.com, and Toginet really is dedicated to bringing entertainment and news to all of us that are hungry for stuff outside of the mainstream. And you won't be able to find any shows, any music like this anywhere else. So go to Toginet.com, check it out. Now, they're still working on some of the more technical things, I think, behind the website. So there isn't a schedule yet, a regular one anyway. And as soon as they get that, I will make sure to post that on the website. So from people tuning in on Toginet, or actually more and more people are listening to the show, believe it or not, people are asking, who am I? And what is this whole blazingtalons.com thing? What is your blog? What is your podcast? All this stuff. Well, as revealed in the last episode where I was put under hypnosis, my real name is Jason, and that's all I'm going to tell you. But I do answer to the Phoenix here on the World Wide Web. I started blogging in the summer of 2005, and I started the blog because really I wanted to explore the not-so-well-known and not-so-mainstream aspects of science. In fact, I wanted to focus on the more humorous side of science. You see, I'm naturally a curious person, and I'm interested in all different types of science, biology, physics, chemistry, which is interesting because I got a C in chemistry, and I really enjoy the paranormal. Love it, love it, love it. Love paranormal stuff. It's fun. And sometimes it gives me the creeps, but it's like, you know, I like to be scared. Psychology I find also very fascinating. I'm a people watcher. I can go to the mall and sit there and watch people behave and watch people act and do things. I could do that all day long. I don't know why. Maybe I'm sick. I don't know. I find it just very interesting. Really, I love to entertain. That's really what it comes down to. And I don't take myself too seriously most of the time. But really, I love to share information. I love to learn. But I believe learning should be fun. So that's really my whole philosophy. This is an interesting show. This is an expanded version of the show. 52 minutes. We found that 26 really was just too short and felt rushed. But as always, we're going to get some science news. And of course, I will continue my past lives regression experience that I had with Kelly Schrimpf, who is a certified hypnotherapist with Ferguson and Associates here in the St. Louis area. It's really a very packed show, nearly an hour long, and I really hope that you don't get sick of me by the end of it. You're listening to the Phoenix Podcast, where science is stranger than fiction.
Yeah, this job pretty much sucks, but I gotta pay the bills. No, not too bad. After 11, it's usually just the drunk people anyway, so. Well, speaking of the devil, I've got one driving up now. I'll call you back later. Hi there, good evening. May I please take your order?
Yeah, hold on a second. I'm looking at the menu.
Alright, take your time, sir. It's a pretty extensive menu.
Yeah.
Hamburgers and french fries. You know, while you're trying to decide, you know, we've got a special on two Big Macs for $2.
Don't offer me anything. I'll tell you what I want.
Okay. By the way, sir, while you're thinking it through, have you ever heard of a podcast before?
Come again.
A podcast, you know, it's like a radio show, but instead of on the radio, it's on the internet.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, I host my own podcast show.
No way!
Yeah, and you know, when you pull around to get your order, I can write down my website address, and you can check out my show.
Give it to me. Check it out.
Cool. All right. So, have you decided yet?
You know how you got the six-piece nugget?
Okay, six-piece chicken McNuggets.
Just, can you give me just four nuggets?
They come in eight and six.
Shut up and listen to my order.
All right.
Take the six nuggets and throw two of them away.
That doesn't make much sense.
I'm just wanting a four-nugget thing. I'm trying to watch my calorie intake.
Sir, they come in eight and six pieces, so I'm going to have to give you the full six, and you can just refrain from eating two of them.
Put two of them up your ass and give me four chicken McNuggets.
All right. Hope you choke on them. Anything else, sir?
All right, Cherry's Jubilee, and that's it. How much is that, sir?
Your total comes to $3.85.
Well, I just got offline, and I'm feeling so fine. I must have had 30 or more. Emails from friends, Lord, where will it end? So much love from these folks I adore. Well, to be totally frank, a few were from banks. offering great mortgage deals. And three, maybe four, were a little hardcore, with a chance to enhance my appeal. But even with a little spam, I thank God every day for this way to keep in touch with friends with so many things to say. Little known facts about unnatural acts, so much I never did know. Do they have email in heaven? If not, I don't want
to. Science News.
And we begin with Science News. This out of the AP Wire in Troy, New York. These two recent college graduates, Evan Baer and Gavin McIntyre, are two very smart young men, and they've created a building material that is organic and fire retardant and, of course, eco-friendly. And what they've done is they've created this material that can be used as insulation that's made out of mushroom spores. Isn't that wonderful? And of course, because, you know, they're just fledgling, you know, recent college grads, they don't have the big sophisticated laboratories and whatnot. So they are growing the insulation with the mushrooms under their beds. These two guys, one's Bayer's 21 and McIntyre is only 22 years old, they are developing this material that they believe has lots of potential. And it's sustainable, it's environment friendly, and apparently doesn't cost very much to make it. Is it just me, or do these two guys remind you of those two nerds in that movie, Weird Science?
By the way, why are we wearing bras on our heads?
Ceremonial.
What they're showing is, in recent tests, these two young guys are saying that their mushroom insulation is competitive with the regular insulations you can find at your local Home Depot or Lowe's store. They're calling it GreenSolate. So the GreenSolate formula has a 2.9 R value, which is the measure of the material's ability to resist heat flow. That's actually not too bad. So it's comparable to what's out there on the market. Basically, here's how it works. They mix water, some mineral particles, starch, hydrogen peroxide. It's poured into these 7x7-inch molds, and then they're injected with living mushroom cells. And then it's placed in a dark environment, like under their beds, where the cells begin to grow and so forth, and the finished product resembles like a giant tile, a 7x7-inch tile made of this amazing material. And this GreenSolate is can be used inside, you know, building walls. And what they're doing is they're right now currently testing the material to see how durable it is. But like I said before, this stuff is fire retardant and it's biodegradable. And according to Bayer, he said that our biggest challenge is that while we have this technology, we still have a lot of research to do. The key is to really make sure we have a product that is mature and robust before we bring it to the market. I would tend to agree somewhat. I think their biggest challenge is to keep potheads from stealing their insulation and smoking it. And this out of the Daily Mail. Many parents believe that their child is the brightest and the best in the world. And of course, that's part of parenting. Everyone thinks their kid's the best. However, a couple out in England, they can say that their child is the best. Their daughter, who is 2 years old, took an IQ test, and they found that her IQ was freaking 152. And this young girl, whose name is Georgia Brown, is the youngest female member of Mensa. They said that if you took her IQ and made it proportion to her age, this puts her in the same intellectual league as world-renowned physicist Stephen Hawking.
The Phoenix podcast made me laugh so hard, I threw up. Thanks, Phoenix.
It's amazing. The parents, Martin and Lucy Brown, they've always known that their child was pretty special. She was crawling at 5 months and walking at 9 months. Okay, personally, that's not really that amazing. Probably ahead of the curve, but not to brag or anything, but my youngest crawled at 4 months. Anyway, By 14 months, she was getting herself dressed. She spoke very early, was able to have real long, proper conversations by 18 months. The interesting thing is, Georgia is the youngest of five children. So this two-year-old girl, Georgia, scored 152 on the standard IQ test, putting her in the top 0.2% of the entire population. And of course, after taking that test and having it recorded officially, Georgia was invited to join Mensa, that group of really smart people. And what's really funny is her mother says that even though she's one of the brightest in the world, she still has temper tantrums like you wouldn't believe, throwing herself on the floor. She doesn't think she's better or clever than everyone else, says her mother. She is a very kind and loving child. And I think that's probably the most important thing. Georgia apparently also has a great sense of humor, and she's busy doing regular toddler things, even though she is a freaking prodigy. She takes ballet, she listens to stories, she loves to dance, she loves to sing, she watches TV, and of course, she loves to create antimatter in one of her Fisher-Price teacups. And to go along with that story, it's a great segue into this, out of Scientific American, they found that a study of more than 240,000 men in Norway showed that older siblings score higher on IQ tests than their younger brothers and sisters. Interesting. So basically, they reviewed data on over 241,310 men, all 18 or 19 years of age, and they were given IQ tests after being drafted into the army from the mid-1960s to the mid-1970s. So they got a whole lot of data. And what they found was that on average, firstborn males had an IQ of 103.2, whereas the secondborn scored about 100.4, and then the thirdborns were, on average, scored of 99. And the scientists believe that when there's more children, the resources will be more scarce for everyone compared with the firstborn, who gets all the attention with no competition.
Marsha, Marsha, Marsha!
This is a big deal because, you know, psychologists have been going back and forth, education experts have been going back and forth, talking about birth order and how we treat our children according to where they fall. And so with every study, you need to take it with a grain of salt. Of course, every family is different, and these are just pure averages, you know, and they're generalizing and so forth. But researchers believe that because the firstborn has a perceived role in the family, then the firstborn is simply living up to that perception. If they believe that their firstborn is more mature, more caring about, you know, learning and whatnot, then the firstborn is going to sort of live up to those expectations. So they're wondering about that. And of course, the study doesn't take into account other factors like environment and socioeconomic status, nutrition, peer influences, and so forth. And of course, a lot of psychologists believe that, you know, with the first child, the parents are more engaged, more interactive, because it is their first kid. And by the time their second kid comes along, they're not as eager to delve into the whole learning thing. Who knows? I don't know. I can tell you one thing. I happen to be the firstborn. Hey, everybody. This is the Phoenix, and I am at the Miller's Homestead. And apparently this is the home where at least two members of the family have committed suicide back in the 1800s. And there's plenty of reports of paranormal activity going on here at this homestead. Lady in white being seen outside, and footsteps, things moving, all kinds of stuff. So I'm actually here in my very first ghost hunting expedition, and I've got all the latest equipment here with me, EMF detector, which measures electromagnetic fields. Many say that when there's a disturbance an increase in electromagnetic field activity, that usually means that there is a spirit nearby. Then various thermometers check the temperature. They also believe that when a spirit is about to manifest itself, it draws the energy, and that includes heat, and the temperature might drop. And batteries have been known to die. And thermal imaging, that enables me to see any if there's anything registering any heat in the dark. And of course my handy dandy digital recorder. And what this does is it allows me to record EVPs, which stands for electronic voice phenomena. And that's basically where a ghost might be trying to reach out and speak, and even if the human ear doesn't pick it up on that audio, these digital recorders pick up that audio. And so that I've got all the tools, and I'm just kind of walking around here a little bit. Haven't seen anything. It's kind of nasty outside, so it kind of adds to the ambiance of this place. It's a little spooky sitting here in the dark by myself, but part of being a ghost hunter, of course, is a combination of different characteristics, and that includes bravery, courage, fearlessness, those different kinds of characteristics and all that. I believe I possess all of them. And so when they challenged me to stay in this house here by myself at night during a storm and try to record any paranormal activity, of course, how could I turn that down, because I'm interested in this kind of stuff, but I'm also quite skeptical. And so... Okay, I could have sworn I heard footsteps. Hello? 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 I definitely heard footsteps, so I'm going to go over there and see what I can find. I'm going to use my thermal imaging camera, and I'm looking through that right now, and it's pretty dark here. Whoa! Holy crap! There was a hideous scream, sounded like a woman, and I got that on audio, I bet. I hope I did. Oh my god. Okay, things are starting to get creepy here. The hair on the back of my neck is standing up. EMF readings are going up. It's continuing to get... What's that? There's something glowing in the hallway, and the thermal imaging camera is picking up this, ball of energy, and it seems to be growing. Hello? What's that? What's that? Something behind me! Something in front of me! I'm out of here, mommy!
Hey, come back! Where are you going? We were just having some fun with you. Come back. I'll even float across the floor for you so you can get a good shot of me. You can do some EVP things, like say, get out of my house. Oh, it'll be a great one. Come on. It'll be funny. And scary. You dropped your equipment. Come on, come back. I wanted to do some infrared shadow bugs. Oh, gee. Yeah.
In episode 7, I was put under hypnosis by Kelly Schrempf of Ferguson & Associates. And Kelly is a certified hypnotherapist, and we were doing a past lives regression therapy session. And I was very surprised to find that I was easily put under. I was very relaxed. And the thing is, I was then going back into my past lives. And instead of sort of reliving it, I was simply watching everything on a mental television screen. That sort of does make sense to me because I am a visual person. I am watching all of these different events on this screen while Kelly is asking me very specific questions. So a lot of the information that you're going to get from this recording, quite limited. And so in my mind, when she asks me a question, I'm replying very quickly. But in reality, I mean, there were, you know, 5, 10, 15 second pauses between when she would ask me a question and when I would answer her. And so what I did was I went ahead and reduced and eliminated a lot of those long pauses. And you can probably tell during the playback that I had to amplify my reply because I was speaking really slowly, speaking real quietly. And so that's just so you're able to listen in. And then, of course, again, I did remove and edit some of the more personal messages, but I guess in summary, that first past life that came through was actually kind of a traumatic one for me because it was so visually gross and violent from what I can tell. That first life that we reviewed in episode 7, I was a Spanish conquistador, and I believe I say the name Alvarado. And there is a Spanish conquistador by the name of Pedro de Alvarado, and he was known for being quite cruel to the native people of Mexico. In fact, he participated and led one of the largest massacres ever to happen. And I had to actually, you know, look up some things because I wanted to see if I could validate some of the things that I was seeing. And there is an event known as the massacre at Tenochtitlan. What happened was Pedro de Alvarado was second in command. Of course, Cortez was first in command, and Cortez had to leave and deal with some issues with some other rival conquistador, I think from Cuba, and Pedro de Alvarado was left in charge of Montezuma's city there. And when they had asked Alvarado permission to go ahead and celebrate their most sacred of all religious celebrations of the year, and Alvarado went ahead and gave them permission to do so. I saw on this mental television screen what this celebration looked like. And it's not your typical, when you imagine, you know, what a religious celebration would look like. There were people, you know, dancing and so forth, but in a really violent manner. They had paint all over their bodies, which looked like blood. They were worshiping some sort of statue that literally looked like Satan. And you have to remember, you know, these conquistadors were very Catholic. And I could feel Alvarado's emotions, and he was quite afraid of this spectacle in front of him, and he was feeling threatened. He was also quite disgusted with this, you know, religious celebration. And so there's two schools of thought as to why Alvarado went ahead and gave the signal to massacre all of the celebrants who were unarmed. And the school of thought from the Aztec point of view, obviously, it was simply greed and so forth. It focused on the greed for the gold that these Aztecs were wearing all over them, the gold that was being offered to this god or the statue that they were worshiping. And then the Spanish version of it, he gave the order to massacre all the Aztecs because, you know, he wanted the gold. But it didn't make it sound so lustful, and did sort of focus on how strange the celebration was. Talks about the whole Christian issue, and the Aztec version does focus on the lust for gold. The Spanish version sort of talks about the lust for gold, but also mentions that he felt that this was blasphemy. If anyone out there is knowledgeable of this whole time period, I'd love to speak with you, just because there are some things that I saw and experienced that are contrary to the Aztec and the Spanish accounts of the massacre. But like I said, yeah, those personal messages that I would rather leave out and just focus on the actual process of past lives regression. It's fascinating. You really do have to prepare yourself before you do something like this. You have to really be cognizant that you might see some things, you might experience some things that you might not necessarily want to know about. So just be forewarned, but on the other side, there's a reason why you're being shown or you're experiencing certain things from your past life experiences, and that's obviously to help you learn and grow today. And one of the questions that I get a lot is, what's the point of past lives if we just completely forget everything? And that's a good question. But the answer I have, and this is an answer I can only come up with after experiencing this for myself, is that you don't forget things from your past life. You really don't. They're ingrained in you, and a lot of the times, your largest faults, you keep repeating them. And some of your greatest strengths, you carry through into your present. So I think a lot of the characteristics, a lot of the personality flaws, some of the mannerisms, and those sorts of things are carried through. You might not be conscious of it, but your subconscious knows everything. So I hope that kind of answers your question. You know, we're going to go into past life number 2 and past life number 3. Now, past life number 2, out of all the 3 lives I reviewed, number 2 is, for some reason, the one that doesn't come out, in my mind anyway, doesn't come out as clearly. I don't feel as connected to that second life that I reviewed. But nevertheless, it's quite interesting.
I want you to find yourself now back in your safe place by the water. And I want you to allow this scene now to fade from view. Step back now into your special place. And now I want you to take in an easy breath. And I want you to allow the next experience, the next life, to come into view. Once again, you're allowing the information to flow to you easily and comfortably, feeling safe. And tell me now, what do you see, Jason?
Desert.
See, you see a desert. Good. And as you step back, tell me, what else can you see in the desert?
Soldiers.
Seeing soldiers in the desert. And what do these soldiers look like?
Metal.
They have metal on. Okay. What else?
Helmets.
Okay.
Shields.
And shields. Okay, good. And tell me, Jason, how do these soldiers make you feel?
Scared.
They make you feel scared. If these soldiers could say anything to you, what would they say?
Will pay.
And they're saying you will pay?
Yes.
Okay. And how does that make you feel?
Scared.
Okay, scared.
Okay, well, it seems that past life number 2 spends a lot of time being scared. But, you know, that's the best way I could verbally explain it. While she's asking me these questions, I am watching a lot of stuff happening on this mental television screen, and I see the this vast desert, not much there. There's like a long line, almost like a chain gang, I guess, of us. And I do feel like I am a soldier, but not one that's accepted. Almost like either a rookie soldier or maybe even a slave that became a soldier. I don't know much about Roman Empire history and stuff, so if anyone can kind of validate that for me, that would be great. I know that they used slaves to build things, and I know that they beat them and had sex with them sometimes, but I had no idea about turning slaves into soldiers. In the next section here, we get to learn a little bit more about this this past life.
Can you see yourself in this lifetime, Jason?
Yes.
And can you describe yourself?
Long, dark hair.
Long, dark hair, good.
Young.
Young. About how old are you, Jason?
18.
18, good. And are you a soldier, too?
Yes.
Can you tell me where you're from?
Egypt.
You're from Egypt. And the soldiers that you see, where are they from?
Empire.
They're part of an empire? Which empire?
Rome.
From Rome. Good. And can you tell me your name in this lifetime?
Sal.
Now, Kelly didn't catch this, but what I was trying to say was that my name was Sa, and I could almost feel my conscious mind start to wake up for a second and go, what the hell? That doesn't make sense. That's like half a name or something. Kelly repeated what she thought she had heard. She thought she heard Sal, S-A-L, but what I was really trying to say was Sa, and upon a little investigation, I found that the name Sa, S-A or S-A-A, is indeed Egyptian in origin. And that kind of gave me, you know, the willies when I looked that up.
And can you tell me, what is your personality like in this lifetime?
Eager.
Innocent and eager, good. What is it the soldiers want from you?
They are teaching me.
Soldiers are teaching Sal. What is it they want Sal to know, to learn?
To follow.
Teaching you to follow. Does Sal want to follow?
Yes.
Yes.
All right, again, another point of clarification. Kelly thought that I had said that Sa was being taught. She'd asked, what do the soldiers want from you? And I replied that they were teasing me. And she said, and Kelly thought I had said, teaching me. They were teasing me. I saw this very clearly. They were actually making me wear all of this heavy armor. It was hot. I was sweating to death. My feet hurt. And they were laughing at me and throwing rocks at me. And they were all just making fun of me, saying that I didn't know anything, that I was going to pay for my arrogance. It felt like I was a very ambitious, eager, willing to die sort of kid, but obviously was very wet behind the ears. And the other soldiers surrounding me were just found that funny, and they were going to teach me some lessons about life. It was almost like a rite of passage, or maybe like I was being hazed.
Tell me, is there any skill or talent that you have in this lifetime that can be used in this lifetime for your success?
Ambition.
Ambition. Good. So we can take that back with you. We can take Saul's ambition and bring it back now in this life for your success and your highest good and greatest joy.
Just as it was with the first past life I examined, this one also had several messages for me. These are like personal messages from a past experience to the person that I am today in order to grow and to, you know, learn either from past mistakes and from past successes. So Asa's ambition is something I can take away from this experience, and also the experience of the lessons learned from being very inexperienced and maybe over eager about jumping into situations and thinking that I know everything. And in the next segment, what we'll do is we'll go over my final past life experience, and it happens to be a woman.
And tell me, Jason, what do you see?
Blossom trees.
Blossom trees. Can you smell the blossom trees?
Yes.
Good. And how does that smell? How does that make you feel, smelling the blossom trees?
Peaceful.
Peaceful. Good.
Okay, so what the hell is up with this fascination with trees? It seems two out of the three past lives I explored noticed the trees first. So I had said blossom trees, and in my mind, they were crystal clear. I could see this again on this television screen. And these were not Japanese cherry blossoms, which I know is a very well-known, popular tree, and it's probably the first kind of tree that most people think of when they think of Japanese tree, either the cherry blossom or bonsai tree. The trees that I saw were quite different. They were bluish purple and they were blossoming, and these blossoms hung down real low. And when I got home later, I looked them up on the internet, and it took me a long time to find the right tree, but the trees that I saw were wisteria trees, Japanese wisterias.
I want you to take a step back now, Jason, and in your mind's eye, tell me, what do you see around and beyond the blossom trees?
Village.
See a village. Do you see anybody in the village?
Yeah.
And do you know these people, or are they someone that's in your life now?
Yes.
Tell me who you see in the village.
Farmers.
You see farmers in the village. Good. Is it someone that is in your life now?
No.
No. Okay. Tell me, can you hear anything?
Children playing.
Children playing. Good.
Hammering.
Good.
Wind. Blowing. Flags.
The wind blowing flags?
Yes.
Good. And can you tell me what time period you're in, Jason?
Imperial.
Okay, can you tell me where you're at?
Japan.
In Japan. Okay, good. So you're in an Imperial Japan. Can you see yourself in this lifetime, Jason?
Yes.
Good. And can you describe yourself?
Hair. Dress.
Long hair and a dress? Are you male or female?
Female.
Female. Good. And about how old are you?
23.
23. Good. And what is your purpose in this lifetime?
Being a mother.
To be a mother?
Yes.
Good. Can you tell me what your name is in this lifetime?
Ichi.
Say it one more time for me, Jason.
Ichi.
Good.
So I'm seeing these beautiful wisteria blossom trees. It feels very peaceful. It's quite windy, and I see these large flags scattered throughout this small village. And I've drawn pictures of these flags and some of the emblems on them. They're very geometric. When Kelly asks me the time period, I reply with imperial. And that really doesn't mean anything to me. It didn't at the time, and I haven't really had the chance to do a little bit of research on that. But if anyone can shed some light on what that means, that would be great. And then, of course, I reveal that my name is Ichi, and I believe that that's not a first name. It just feels more like a last name. And I do know, I looked this up later, that Ichi means one, and I'm wondering if Ichi is just part of a last name. Sometimes, you know, some of these words will be used as a prefix to create a longer name, so I'm thinking that's what this is. And then when she asks me what my purpose is in this lifetime, I replied with mother, to be a mother. And when I said that, I felt quite emotional. There was this overwhelming feeling of being a mother and a protector. And that sort of evoked some emotion for me when I said that.
And is there anything that the people, the farmers in the village, wish to say to Ichi?
I'm sorry. Pity.
They feel sorry for Ichi. They feel pity. Do you know why that is?
Lost husband.
Ichi lost her husband?
Yes.
Does Ichi have any children?
Yes.
Okay. She's 23 now. How many children does Ichi have?
One
child. A boy or a girl?
Boy.
And her job is to be a mother in this lifetime.
As Kelly was asking me these questions, I was seeing various scenes, some of them very sentimental, others still sort of a mystery to me. This woman had lost her husband, and she had a son to care for. And as she was walking through the street in this village, everyone was looking at her and her son with a sense of sorrow, some pity. They felt bad for her, and she didn't want any of that. And she felt like it was unnecessary. And that's, I think, where that stubbornness comes from. That maybe some of the villagers, some of the others, have offered to help her. And she refused it because she felt that, you know, she could handle it all on her own. And that feeling was quite strong. In the last segment, she's pulling me out of the hypnotic state. So it's pretty interesting to hear.
Five, beginning your journey back to awareness, feeling relaxed and comfortable, you will be able to remember more and more of your past life regression as you reflect on your experience. Four, feeling very positive about your regression experience, slowly and gradually, some of the feelings now are coming back into your feet and legs. 3, feeling the warmth, the peace, and the love that the universe has for you flowing through your body. And you feel very positive and relaxed. You're becoming more and more aware of everything around you, outside sounds and noises. 2, coming all the way back to an alert state where you are aware of the love of the universe and the love it has for you. This feeling will stay with you after you are totally aware. And 1, at your own pace as you're ready to, take in a deep breath and allow your eyes to open slowly.
I'm hoping you noticed that as she was pulling me out of this, of this hypnotic state, that she planted the suggestion that as I move forward in my waking hours, that I would begin to continue to remember things from my past lives, which I thought was quite interesting. And that concludes my investigation on past lives regression. And I gotta tell you, I found this whole experience not just interesting and fascinating, but it was life-altering. And I think really, in order to understand, you have to go through it yourself. And the whole notion of living past lives no longer feels so out there or out in left field anymore. To me, it makes more sense. And I hope you've enjoyed listening to the Phoenix Podcast Episode 8 here on the TogiNet Internet Radio Network. And maybe learned a thing or two and got some laughs out of it. Either way, I hope I brought more joy to your lives, past and present. Till next time, Phoenix out.